Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. All right, you should be hearing our beautiful voices in 4K HD sound now.
Is that
sure?
We've upgraded.
I assume that light is on.
We got a microphone. It definitely seems like it's working.
Okay.
It'll be hilarious that this entire podcast is just me talking. It doesn't hear anyone else.
Had that happen before.
No, it's okay. It's definitely picking up Dave. I see little
because there's
waves.
Little lines going up and
me?
Down.
Are the lines waving for me?
Lines wave for
yes.
Ask not for whom the lines wave. They wave for thee.
I like seeing the lines because then I feel like I were in a future movie.
Yes.
I always think I'm Banshee. I can see the
lines. This week's been interesting. We woke up. Facebook crashed.
Hope everybody out there is doing all right. We had a few hours without it. You youngsters out there were not aware, but there's a social media called Facebook or Meta in some quarters.
Don't use that dumb name.
Listen, they're going to ignore it the same way. They're only on Instagram or whatever they're on.
TikTok,
yeah, that's true. TikTok is
so,
for sure.
So that crashed, and then we have laptop issues and microphone issues.
Yep.
And various other things, but the computers, we defeated the computers.
We fought our way past Skynet for you,
to bring you a
the
podcast.
Listener.
Don't say that. They're going to take that personal.
I dare them to. Come on, bring it on.
Dave, you always dare everybody to do
punk
everything.
Punk-ass robots. Skynet ain't done shit.
So we're also running a little bit late. It's been a crazy, so maybe a slightly shorter podcast.
Yep.
But we want to announce the clearance sale is in its final month.
Yes.
So everything on the table is 75% off, which means you're getting graphic novels for like $5.
Yeah, there was a guy who picked up some stuff yesterday. They were like $3 and $4.
There's great stuff on there still too.
Yes, there was a guy yesterday who was like, he picked up the Criminal hardcover.
Yeah.
That was normally $60
yep.
at for like what I don't know was that $15.
I don't know. I can't do math that fast.
It's something like
that. 12 and change.
I think it's
okay.
It's like 15 is a quarter of 60.
Sure.
Check out the big brain on Dave.
I think. and he was thrilled. As well he should be. Like, that is an amazing hardcover to get for that. And he came up and he's like, you guys have some amazing stuff on here. And I'm like, I know. But yes, do not think that just because it has been up there for a little bit that there are not goodies on there.
Yep.
Because people have let so many a thing slide past
them. They really have.
And just as a random example, Stepan Sedgwick's the six issues he drew of Aquaman, they were really some of the best art that book has ever
that
seen.
Was on there.
That is still on there.
Yeah.
If y'all don't get it, I'm gonna. And I already own it.
Not a lot of games. Real quick, just knock out a game called Dorf Romantik: The Duel,
yep.
which is
that's a weird word.
It's a Dorf two-player
Romantik.
Game. I don't know what it is. It's just a two-player game that's getting good reviews.
Yeah, people have been picking it up already. Like apparently it's a thing.
And then the Pathfinder Core, the new player and GM Core,
that's pretty notable.
Came out in pocket editions.
Yep.
So if you wanted a pocket edition of them, we have them now. We also sell the main hardcovers.
Yeah, if you're on the road, if you're traveling. And you need to quick play an elaborate Pathfinder game?
Can't they just call them mini editions? Because they're not really pocket size.
I guess if you have a big, giant pocket.
No, they assume you're wearing some giant-ass
like,
cargo shorts.
From, like, the 90s, like the JNCOs?
Yeah, if you're in JNCOs, they're pocket edition.
Right, if you're wearing those, the hardcovers are a pocket edition.
The Pathfinder JNCO pocket edition, yes.
Corporate branding, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Look, JNCO probably could use the money.
Yeah.
Or MC Hammer.
They need to go ahead and get Wayne Reynolds to start drawing the occasional adventurer wearing those.
Yes, wearing JNCOs.
He'll make it really cool with like all these like they'll have like scrolls and like little daggers and stuff.
I don't know if you've seen. I feel like he's drawn some guys in sort of JNCO type.
I think
pants.
He might have. Yeah. I have to say, by the way, just to say, the cover of I think it's the DM's Handbook.
It's the GM Core, yeah.
GM Core has this cool looking dude who I'm not 100% sure if he's a druid or a cleric or what, but he has this cool. Kind of green armor on and like these peacock feathers behind his head and a big old warhammer and he looks badass. I'm sure he's one of their newer iconics.
And he's standing in front of a dragon.
It is like that dude's art is still rocking it.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah. All right, let's talk comics for the week. It's a big week of comics. Lots of new number ones. Several, like, oversized. We'll maybe start with some of those.
I will say, there is a comic of every size.
Yes, there are.
We should mention the Turtles.
That's one of the oversized ones.
Oh, you're right. It is oversized.
I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm about, son.
I wasn't sure.
All right. So, yes, there's three different sized, big, oversized books.
Yep.
The one that people have been waiting for, it's been moved, like, several times, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Last Ronin 2, Re-Evolution, number one.
Yep.
It's a bit of a mouthful, but if you say Last Ronin 2, we're going to know what you're talking about.
Although, technically, it's Last Ronin 3, because they already did a Last Ronin prequel.
That's a prequel, Randy. It's different.
It's Last Ronin 0.
Yeah, that's right. And, in fact, they already did do a special that had the first story set after Last Ronin.
Right.
So this is Last Ronin 2.5, really.
Right. So if you ask for 2, we're going to get very confused. You have to ask for 2.5.
But I think the key thing...
if you ask me for 2.5, I'm going to be confused.
The key thing to know is this is the direct continuation, and it jumps ahead 10 years, yep. Which I believe kind of gets the new generation of turtles that are arising to the right age group to start kicking some ass and be teenage ninjas, as is the style. So yeah, that's exciting. Like Last Ronin was what the biggest hit we've had in years.
It is before Transformers. It was the big crossover hit.
Yep. Yeah, and although they have done these a few specials and prequels, this is the first really big formal sequel. So you're gonna want to get in on it.
Yeah.
Duh.
So, then, do
you want to disappoint Master Splinter? Did he die for nothing?
Did he die?
I don't know. Yes, it's like way in the future.
Oh, everybody died. Everybody died.
Even if he wasn't like killed by Shredder or something, he would have died of old age.
Everyone but the Last Ronin.
Yeah.
Died.
But now then, and plus there's new ones.
And they're not Last Ronin
anymore. I think April's around and stuff.
Right. So technically,
don't panic.
This should be called Last Ronin 2.5, not actually the Last Ronin.
Last Ronin and his change. Kids. So we also have
The Batman First Night.
Yes.
Yeah, this is an interesting project. They've done these kinds of things before, but it's not quite year one. It's year one for the Batman character created in 1939.
So yes, this is a black label project, which means it's out of continuity and it is in that oversized format.
And it means they can drop the F-bomb.
This is set in 1939. It's pre-World War II. It is,
but the tensions of fascism are ratcheting up, and Gotham is still struggling with the effects of the Great Depression. And they made an interesting point in one of the little things I read on it, which is that this Batman is not quite, he's depicted more as he was then, which is actually they had not yet added in all the big super science stuff.
This is Batman as pulp hero.
Yeah, yep. no Batmobile or anything like that.
He's wearing his purple gloves.
He's got his purple gloves and he probably shoots people.
He hasn't done that yet, but he does do some detective work. I don't think this was around yet then, but he does, like, dust for fingerprints and things like that. And it's also bringing in what seems to be elements of the Monster Men. There are, like, political killings.
Which was an early... That was an early thing.
Yeah, yeah. There are, like, political killings going on. Like, literally, like, people who are, like, I don't know, politicians and judges and aldermen and stuff like that are getting their heads literally torn off. That's that black label edge to it.
Yeah. Fingerprinting began in 1892 in Argentina.
Okay. But how
1903 in U.S. prisons.
Okay. Prisons?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They started identifying all the convicts.
So
okay.
I guess it was in use. Maybe not as there was no CSI in 1939.
He's using it more CSI style.
Yeah, you're right.
I think people are gonna want to check this out. It's got a bit of edge, but it's not ridiculous. It's written by Dan Jurgens, who's he's been around for a while, and like Death of Superman is probably what he's best known for as an artist. But he's also written stuff over the years, and I always like to mention he did this Flash Gordon miniseries, an original Flash Gordon concept in the 80s. It's really cool. DC should reprint it if they can get the rights.
The art is by Mike Perkins, and it is spectacular.
Yeah, Perkins did do some of the Winter Soldier era. Not Winter Soldier exactly, but he did.
No, it was Winter Soldier. I think he may have drawn Winter Soldier.
Oh, okay. So it's got that kind of that sort of gritty vibe to it.
And a photorealistic style, too.
Are we on to
the third weird shaped one? Is Image's The Last Mermaid, which is by writer artist Derek Kirk Kim.
What is he best known for? I can't remember.
I know his stuff, but we looked it up and I was like, it was nothing I could be like, you couldn't say, oh, it's that, and people were like, oh, it's that.
People he is a notable Korean creator who's done some biographical material and things like that.
And his stuff has been really good. This is his first, like, mainstream project.
And this looks like a post-apocalyptic world and has a mermaid in a mech suit.
It is a mermaid in a mech suit.
Hydrated, yes. I was, like, trying to figure out the
word. It's got water in it.
Of water.
And she rides around with her pet axolotl.
Yes.
Which is not how you pronounce it, but that's how I always pronounce it.
Yep. And, this is kind of like a, it's very visual, like an animated project would be, that's following her, like, what, the water in it, like, toxifies after a while, like, days or months or something like that, and so she has to, like, find a new source of water to fill the mech that she's in, and that's what she's on the quest, she's, it's clearly in and around San Francisco, post-disaster or something,
because
you see the Golden Gate Bridge. And but yeah, she's like trying to find like water in underground caves, and so it's the vibe is survival story. There's not a whole lot yet on like, oh, how did this mermaid get in a mech suit? But it's pretty compelling.
I mean, if you gotta ask.
By the moment, and she's friendly with her axolotl.
Yep.
It's got a few very harrowing sequences, but like, this is one of the books, Last Mermaid, that you just want to flip through and check out the art, and I think that'll get you on board or not.
Let's talk Marvel. They have like a half dozen number ones this week. A lot of new Marvel stuff.
And one really big, pretty big notable one.
So let's start with Spectacular Spider-Man number one.
Right. I guess really two, I guess, in that case. Yeah.
Yes.
Is it Spectacular Spider-Man, right?
This is the new series by Greg Weisman, the creator of Spectacular Spider-Man, the cartoon.
The best Spider-Man cartoon.
And Gargoyles, and Young Justice.
And Young Justice, yeah.
And this is a team-up book between Peter Parker and Miles Morales.
Yep, with art by Humberto Ramos.
Yep. And it kind of opens with them fighting a classic, what seems to be a new take on a classic villain from Spider-Man.
I saw that they flashback then, and the guys, they're talking like, hey, let's hang out more often. Let's try and, like, hang out once a week.
Yep.
Right.
And they're like, but you know, it won't even be Spider-Man business. We're just going to hang out and just, like, be buds.
But then it turns into Spider-Man
business. I really liked the banter between the two. It felt like they were friends.
It's pretty fun.
And, like, they're trying to sort of continue that relationship.
I want to go hang out with them and get involved in Spider-Man business. I could get killed by the creature.
Yeah.
That's how you know how bad it is.
That's true.
But I like that they've given them a new sort of location at this coffee shop.
The coffee shop, yeah.
With, like, the owners.
A couple of deep cut supporting cast.
Yeah.
One of whom I think was only in the Ultimate Universe before.
I believe that's correct. And then there's a couple of, like, story teases throughout. This book is doing a lot.
It's a fun Spider-Man book. And we need a fun Spider-Man.
Also, that art by Humberto Ramos, I think people, if you don't know what his style is like, check it out. It's actually not quite as cartoony as it used to be.
No, it's a little more reined in.
But he's great at drawing Spider-Man. And he's also, I think, having a lot of fun with the setting. It's actually pretty detailed.
Yeah.
All the cityscapes and stuff.
This is a really good first issue.
The other big book, well, first of all, we should mention Ultimate Spider-Man number one. Gets its third printing.
Yep.
Yes.
So if you missed out on it, we now have it. We hope we have enough. It's been selling like crazy.
Pretty much the most requested book of the year.
And we get the third Ultimate book. Ultimate X-Men comes out this week. This is a weird one.
We've sold out, by the way, of Ultimate Spider-Man immediately, Ultimate Black Panther immediately. So, you know, go ahead and probably get this one.
This is written and drawn by writer-artist Peach Promoko, who's done Demon Days.
She's super prolific. She does all kinds of covers and stuff.
Well, she does tons of variant covers.
So much so that at one point when I was starting to recognize her name, I'm like, is this a collective of artists and not just one person? And then one of my friends who's a former editor was like, no, she's one person. She's just really prolific.
If Marvel wanted to do like an art bug of Peach Promoko, I think that would sell.
I think they have, actually.
Have they done it? Did they do one of the oversized ones?
They did something, yeah.
She has a sort of, if you haven't seen it, kind of what I would call a slightly exaggerated cartoony style, but it's done in watercolor.
Yeah.
And it for sure shows the influence of manga.
Yeah.
But it's kind of its own thing, too. And she's been, like, her covers have been hugely sought after. And this is kind of, in some ways, maybe the most radical reinvention, you know, of the Ultimate line. Which is to say, it's going to be lensed through the eyes of a Japanese girl who, can we say who she is?
Like, yeah, I think we should say mystery? Who she is.
It's the somewhat lesser known, but still notable X-Men from Whedon's time, Armor?
I think that was a Whedon character,
She was a Whedon character.
So this is Armor, and it is actually, this first issue feels more like a supernatural manga than it does an X-Men book. It is a slow burn intro of the concept, but the X-Men are going to be based in Japan.
Yep. This takes place of a middle school girl who's graduating middle school and is dealing with some, looks like some past trauma.
Yep.
And a supernatural element.
And then spoilers, her powers manifest.
Yes, spoilers, her powers manifest. I want to say, though, her artwork throughout is just gorgeous.
It's really nice.
Her storytelling. It's pretty good. It's fantastic.
The strange entity that is talking with her is creepy looking.
Yeah.
Feels like something a little bit out of a Junji Ito story.
More than a little. Yeah. I'd say it looks exactly like
There's definitely elements throughout that are kind of very much that
style. I suppose you could say that it looks, at least in this first issue, like she is lensing getting your powers as a mutant and like that kind of thing as like a kind of a horror story.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
When you don't know what it is, it feels basically supernatural.
Yeah.
It's
an interesting take. I think people will be surprised by this. I'm curious to see where they go from here.
Yep.
You know what was
the coolest? Did you see that last page where she shows some of like the girl's like kind of gear?
Kind of the breakdown.
It's like
breakdown,
yeah, it's like here's like a little locket she has, and they're like, in Japan this means this. Or like, did you see the button thing?
Yeah.
Randy?
Yeah.
So apparently a common thing on like what graduation day at schools. It's for boys to show their affection for girls by taking, like, literally, I guess you take the button.
It's the second button.
The second button from the top of your shirt off, remove it, and give it to them. It's like the one that's over your heart, kind of.
I ain't ruining my shirt.
That's why you're not going to get
none. I'll never find love.
You ain't going to get none in Japan.
I'll never find love because I don't want to ruin my shirts.
I believe what they would do is remove that and then probably be studious and sew on a new button.
Oh.
And, so you probably got to do that.
What if it? So if you give the button to the girl and she then sews a new button on, but if she rejects you, you leave. You walk around with no button on your shirt.
Yeah, you got to look disheveled.
Yeah, you're like that guy. That guy lost his button.
Loser.
That's what they say. He lost his button.
He lost his heart.
I think I really enjoyed this one because it kind of took me by surprise. It didn't give me what I expected, and right. I kind of have to applaud it for
nice,
that.
It's nice to have something that kind of subverts some expectations sometimes.
Yeah. The other
this book did not subvert expectations. This exactly what I expected, but it's so much fun. Weapon X-Men number one.
So if you
it's a follow-up to.
There is a one thing called Original X-Men.
Yep.
There was a one-shot by Christos Gage, the writer Christos Gage, who also did, like, Fortnite. He did the Fortnite Marvel.
Yeah.
I think Fortnite DC. I think he did both.
He did.
And he did Avengers Academy. He's a writer I really like. But
the original
X-Men, there's a second printing coming. I think it may be next week or week after.
It had to do with, like, alternate worlds and the original X-Men team being pulled to one to help.
You don't have to read that to
read
this.
Right.
No. But basically, an alternate version of Phoenix... is facing a version of Onslaught.
Yep.
Who in this context kind of is a mix of Jean Grey and Magneto, a sort of world-ending mutant. She can't directly confront him, or he might gain the Phoenix Force and become truly unstoppable.
Correct.
So she gathers Wolverines from various universes, including...
Can we say who they are?
Yeah, she should say who the Wolverines are.
So it's the Wolverine from Marvel Zombies.
Yes. Which is hilarious.
The fat Wolverine from Earth-X.
Yes.
Old Man Logan from Old Man Logan.
Yep.
The Wolverine from Age of Apocalypse, the one-handed Wolverine.
Yep.
And then the Jane Howlett of Earth 1281, which I was unfamiliar
with. That's a new character.
Okay.
So a world where James Howlett, the one you saw in Wolverine Origins, was a girl.
Right. Yes.
By the way, I am sure Fat Wolverine has many other qualities to define him other than his fatness.
Yeah, sounds what Fat Wolverine is saying throughout this book.
Yeah, he's kind of schlubby.
He's very much a schlub.
And His little mane of hair is all droopy.
You know what schlubby Wolverine I want is the one from Wolverine Havoc,
who was
also a schlubby Wolverine, but he kind of was like an ass-kicking. He looked like he was a guy who beat you up at a bar.
Yeah. This is schlubby old Wolverine.
Anyway, and so are they on the same page?
So they go to an alternate world. They're trying... Basically, she's using them to track down and destroy Onslaught. She's like, I got you guys because I know I can trust you. And I know I can trust you to make the hard decisions if you have to.
This is basically...
She needs killers.
This is basically if Exiles was composed of an entire team of all Wolverines.
Yes, it's very...
Oops, all Wolverines.
But the alternate world they pick is really interesting. It's one where the X-Men and Avengers fended off a Badoon invasion. And therefore mutants are not hated here. It's like they're all celebrated and... It's a really good, and the twist about Onslaught is good.
Badoon, that's...
Well, Gage does a nice little character moments for everybody. All of them, and is not afraid to make some fun at certain things,
he's got a text piece in the back where he does his little cliff notes.
Oh, I didn't read that.
It's great. He has cliff notes for where all these characters appeared, And also he mentions, he's like, it turns out Zombie Wolverine is a ton of fun to read, to write.
I mean, I would assume so.
Because, yeah, Phoenix gives him, like, at the beginning, gives him an energy thing. It's like, here, this will take care of your hunger. But he still just kind of wants to eat people.
Yeah. And I will say the art is really nice.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly.
Yodre Sonar.
I don't know where I know him from.
X-Men but... Red. Tom Taylor's X-Men Red.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it's very clean, very easy to read, good action. So yeah.
That was my favorite thing I read this week. I actually really liked it.
All three Marvel outings were fun for me. So.
And then Ms. Marvel, Mutant Menace, which is the follow-up miniseries to the previous Ms. Marvel that made her a mutant.
Yep.
Now she is a mutant, and she's basically a little people. There's Jersey City's divided. They're like, well, she's our hero, and people are like, well, but she's a mutant, and I don't know if I trust her anymore, and that kind of stuff. So. It's written by Iman Vellani.
She needs to go to Badoon World.
Yes. It's co-written by Iman Vellani, who plays Ms. Marvel.
Yep.
If
you want to see her life as a mutant, this is it.
This is it.
By the way, is going to be kind of a thing in the movies in some way, shape, or form.
Probably. Slightly weird, but pretty fun. There is the first What If Aliens this week. It was from an idea by Paul Reiser and his son. About his character.
You may remember Paul Reiser's character as the inhumanly weaselly Burke.
Carter Burke.
In Aliens. The worst human ever who was going to try and transport aliens to Earth in as embryos in Ripley and Newt.
I will say that the art in this, done by Guyu Villanova.
Yeah.
He does an amazing job at
likenesses. The likenesses are great.
I'm like, oh man, that is Hicks. That's Sigourney Weaver.
It opens by recreating the iconic scene where they've caught him.
Yep.
They know what he's going to do and they're about to kill him when the power goes out and, you know, the aliens come and it's the scene where they're like, they're 2 meters, that's in the room. You know, it's that scene where Hicks freaks out and all hell breaks loose and they have it just so that instead of him getting killed in this, I don't want to quite say how it happens,
but he doesn't
die.
He
manages to get out,
and he gets out in the most Weasley way possible.
Yes.
And then we sort of see what happened to him if he had gotten off that planet. What would have happened to him?
He does one good thing.
Yes.
In there, what, like one halfway decent thing, which is interesting because it directly references another movie.
Yeah.
I
thought that was interesting.
I thought that was interesting too. And then we kind of, it sort of like shows like, well, how does he, and I guess I won't say too much more, but like, how does he engage with the company after this mission gone wrong? Like, when he tells, when they find out, like, the planet got nuked, basically, and, like, all the stuff that he was supposed to do has not happened, he's got to figure out a way, if possible, to make that right. And then the book also forwards the timeline a bit, and you kind of see how his life is going and what he's going to be doing.
Yeah,
I think this is a really fun comic.
Kind of messed up, but fun.
And if you're any
like,
stripe
I know
of,
nobody was clamoring for Burke.
No, but if you're any stripe of a fan of Aliens, I think this is definitely one to check out.
Yeah,
it's got all the classic tropes, but done kind of in a unique, fun way.
It's kind of audacious to do, like, say, like, what if this piece of shit had lived?
it was surprisingly fun, and I can't wait to see where they go with it. Because like half of this issue is the setup,
yes.
Right?
But it's gonna be usually What If is like self contained, but they're starting to do more longer What If stories, and I think this will be fun. They've been doing mostly these giant size, which are sort of annuals. They usually have a reprint and they have a new story.
Yep.
There's a giant size Spider Gwen. This is gonna be one of the last stories in her world, as she is gonna be coming to 616 permanently in the new Spider Gwen series. So. Kind of a fun take on Mary Jane.
I was going to say, this is a... Can we say what the deal...
I don't think you should say it.
There's a fun little new status quo for Mary Jane, and I like the art in this one. It's kind of a little cartoonish.
It's the Mary Jane of Spider-Gwen's world.
Correct. Yeah. Not
the traditional prime Mary Jane.
Not Jackpot. The leader of the Mary Janes, the band.
Right.
But yeah, it's a fun story, and then it reprints one of the mysterious stories from the actual Spider-Gwen comic.
And then there's a new book from, is it IDW? I think it's IDW. Golgotha Motor Mountain. Dave, can you say what the pitch for this one is? It was three words.
It was four words.
Four words, okay.
Redneck Body Horror Nightmare.
Redneck Body Horror Nightmare.
And that's all you need to say.
And it is drawn by the artist of Spider-Gwen from back when, the original creator. Yes, I have not had a chance to read this, but if you're like the kind of person who hears those words in combination, redneck, body horror nightmare. Perhaps this is the book for you.
It appears to be meth dealers who get involved in some kind of body mutating thing.
Sure. I mean, yeah. That sounds like some good trash, possibly.
Then we've got a lot of graphic novels this week.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even grab all of them to mention, but there's a lot of graphic novels this week that you'll want to check out for a varieties. And then one that I want to specifically highlight is something called Nothing Special, which is by an artist called Katie Cook. She does a lot of sort of cutesy manga. And this is her two not-so-human teenagers and a friendly ghost of a radish face the fantasy adventure of a lifetime. This is a webcomic that she's done. This is the first 29 episodes. It looks super cute and funny.
I was flipping through it yesterday, and it looked really good.
Yeah. I've liked a lot of Katie Cook's stuff, and so I'm excited to see her get a big print collection. And then, Dave, you wanted to mention D&D The Fallbacks.
Yeah, this is a new D&D novel that, you know, where a lot of them have been kind of at least somewhat more serious fantasy stuff, like Drizzt would be the obvious one.
Yeah.
This one is very much in the style of D&D, Honor Among Thieves?
Yeah, the movie.
The movie, so which is to say, it's kind of goofy. The team's kind of a bunch of screw-ups. The characters, as described on the back of the thing, their adventuring party include, like, a cleric who won't commit to one god because they want to, like, kind of get powers and favors from all the gods.
Yep.
And then there's a... I'm trying to remember what the others were... there was a self-taught magic user.
Okay.
A bard that has as many secrets as he does songs. And then their pet, which is a little pet Ot-Yug.
They have an Ot-Yug.
Yeah, if people know of the D&D monster Ot-Yugs, they're like the big old tentacled garbage-eating monsters that prowl around in dungeons and eat anything left over.
Yep.
And somehow they have like a little cute one that's with them as their party members. The opening sequence has them trying to figure out opening a chest because the last few chests they've opened have been mimics, and they're like talking to themselves, and they're like, well, they can't all be mimics, right? and that's the kind of vibe of it, and it looks like a lot of fun and a change up for D&D.
So as we said, it is a big week, and there's a lot of single issues as well. One of the notable things is the return of Void Rivals.
Yes, Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo De Felici's began the Energon universe.
Right. It's interesting. This one has no Transformers content that I noticed. Unless there's something
obscure I didn't catch. There's some notable stuff in there.
Okay, I guess I didn't catch it.
There's some ideas at play, and I reread the trade that came out.
We're talking about
like
Crazy
ago.
Theory.
I think that Crazy Theory might come to fruition.
Interesting. But they also introduced a new Nemesis, who I think looks cool.
Yes. But there's just more about the two rival kind of worlds that are and alien races that are trying to kill each other, and the two of our leading characters trying to go on the run and going to some interesting places on their world, which I thought was really cool. I thought the artist got to do some really big splash pages that kind of give some scope, I think.
Yeah, Kirkman, we were talking about this, he lets his artists have some room to do really cool stuff.
There's also just the design work on some of the aliens, like their religious zealots are really cool looking.
Yeah, the designs are cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this book back because, like I said, I read the trade recently and it was kind of reinvigorating me reading it all at once.
Yeah. Also, Birds of Prey comes back with number 7. It's a new artist, Javier Pina, who is really good. And it brings, after they left Oracle out of the first mission for reasons, and now Oracle's in the fold.
Nice.
And there's also this is a really fun issue, I thought, this of like setting up a new status quo, a new mission for the Birds of Prey.
I need to catch back up on
it. It was a really good issue. Avengers number 11 is actually sort of a standalone. It brings in an Avengers villain. They're having sort of a post-mission debrief after their big fight with the villains they just fought in their new headquarters, and Jarvis shows up to basically become the butler again in this giant weird alien city.
Okay.
And I was like seeing Jarvis as opposed to like Jarvis the AI.
Right.
I like old school British butler Jarvis. So it was a fun issue. And then the Sentry miniseries concludes with a pretty solid finale.
Okay.
And
this one where Sentry's powers got split.
Yep. And Sensational She-Hulk this week I really liked. Has She-Hulk and Jack of Hearts going to take a vacation in outer space. Because, you know, you can do that kind of thing when you're a superhero.
Yeah.
And I guess, Dave, we should mention Batman
145,
which starts the post Joker Year One story.
Yep, it's a new storyline called Dark Prisons.
We also got the reprint of the first part of Joker Year One, so we now have all three parts in stock. Did I miss anything?
I would just mention, if you're a creeper aficionado,
there's gotta be some.
Not creepers like you know, some dude coming perving on you in a bar, but the creeper at DC, you know, Jack Ryder, the weird yellow superhero freako.
Nobody knows Jack Ryder.
They do. Our people do. anyway, this issue number 9 of Shazam has, I guess, podcaster Billy Batson interviewing Jack Ryder.
He's a podcaster,
yeah. Which I thought was a good idea.
Yeah, sure.
Interviewing Jack Ryder, and their alter egos end up into play, so you get sort of schoolboy Captain Marvel with Freako, the Creeper.
Yep.
Which is, I think, a fun combo.
Yep. Nick, anything else on your stack?
No, I think we covered everything.
All right, cool. We're going to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about some news for the week. All right, so we got some trailers to talk about, mostly horror.
Yep.
With one exception, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any particular reason why they're mostly horror, but there's some cool-looking stuff in there.
So let's start with a non-horror one, and that's Kevin Costner's new two-part, potentially three-part.
I've heard tell that there's a third part, but who knows?
It's a Western movie. It's called Horizon, an American Saga.
Yep.
First part hits in June, second part in August, I think.
Yep.
Something like that. It looks like big, sweeping Western...
Yeah. Frontier epic.
Yeah.
Nick, you have perhaps read about this or seen the trailer and watched it a little bit. You have connections more to Kevin Costner because you have been beloved. He's one of your actors from when you were a kid.
I mean, I will agree with that.
So can you tell me what the plot, or do we even quite know yet?
No.
Okay.
It looks like there's a lot of, like, varying stories going on right now throughout.
Right. And it does look like it's going to, like, jump around between, like... his perspective, a Native American perspective.
Yep.
There's a guy who seems like an asshole, like a scary asshole man.
There also looked like there was the military of some of stripe.
And broadly speaking, it's like that westward expansion with like people like pushing west, and I'm sure trying to claim land that's unclaimed, but probably claimed by Native.
Yeah,
unclaimed by white dudes. I imagine he's going to broadly give a sympathetic treatment of it, but it looks there's also some scary natives in it too. So
there also looked like there were some scary white people in it too.
Yeah, yeah.
I like Kevin Costner. That's not to say that everything he's made is a gem, because I'm looking at you, the postman.
Well, let me ask a question. Randy, have either you, I know that I have not, have you ever seen, say, Wyatt Earp or even Dances with Wolves?
No.
You haven't seen Dances with Wolves?
Nope.
I also have not seen Dances with Wolves. I kind of think I might try and catch that one at some point, because it's pretty... That's a pretty notable one.
Yeah,
it's a good one. Did he win an Oscar for it?
He did.
Okay.
Won multiples,
but,
I believe.
But Nick, you have seen these?
Did Dance with Wolves beat Goodfellas? I believe it did.
It might have.
And I will hate it forever because of that.
No, I think it rightly won.
Nope.
Like little kids in school.
No, I mean... this looks like it's got a broad cast of people, and I saw like Giovanna Ribisi and John Huston, and
it's a huge cast.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna run out and see this, but if reviews are good, I like westerns.
I like some westerns, but I'm very picky about them.
I guess I would say I find that like it's like any genre, but I have seen great westerns and like a lot of them.
Your favorite western?
Searchers?
If it counts. I don't remember the Searchers that well.
I really like the Searchers.
No.
I thought you were going to say, like, Silverado.
That's my childhood favorite, you know what? My favorite is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
Like actually, bar none. The only exception is a mini-series, which is Lonesome Dove.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's it otherwise. And what about you, Nick?
Mine is definitely a popcorn thing, but Tombstone is... Oh.
I mean, Tombstone is, like, a really good, best kind of popcorn movie. It is... It's not unlike Silverado was to the 80s.
But I also like the Man with No Name trilogy. I like all three of them.
Yep.
I think I liked Unforgiven, which is sort of a deconstruction of it. But I've seen Man with No Name trilogy, at least I think I've seen a couple of them, and it didn't quite resonate with me. I've seen and liked both Silverado and Tombstone, but I don't rewatch them. They don't stick out for me.
As a genre, do you like westerns more or less than fantasy?
Oh.
As a genre. They're both equal trash to Randy.
I think I like westerns a little bit more, but I think the western by its nature is a little problematic. It is
sure. It's a lot of mythologizing.
It's mythologizing our genocide of the native populace of America, and it's a little rough to get. Like, there's almost no way to do it that doesn't feel a little off.
Least since the, I mean, even in the 50s, you can find westerns that subverted stuff.
Yeah.
Like what do you call it? What's the one? High Noon.
Yeah.
Is like famously kind of meant to echo the cowardice of like the Red Scare, as I recall, or blacklisting, because like it's like is it Jimmy Stewart?
I don't know.
Or is it no? It's somebody else.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's like nobody in the town will stand up for him and join him in this thing, and then for sure, in the 60s and onward, they definitely started acknowledging it. But even those, lots of problematic stuff, they still kind of want you to like get behind gunslingers a lot of times.
Well, that's the thing, like, I really like Quick and the Dead, the Sam Raimi.
Super fun movie.
Yeah. I like sort of pop westerns where they'll take
Young Guns.
I do like, no, actually, I don't remember Young Guns.
You know what? I rewatched that recently. That is like a good script. It is. It's really good script.
Young Guns 2, maybe not so much.
Maybe not so much. Young Guns 2 is the Venom 2 of Young Guns movies.
I actually think it's better than Venom 2.
I think it is too.
There's one I'm trying to remember. Netflix did one that I really like.
The most recent one with the all black cast.
Yes. What was that called? I don't remember the song. The Harder They Fall.
Harder They Fall.
I really like The Harder They Fall. So there's, I liked Unforgiven. I like all these, but like it's not a genre I want to see if it's not a little bit pop or like I like Django.
Yeah.
And I like
DJ Ango.
And I like The Hateful Eight and all that kind of stuff. I like the stuff that's a little bit exaggerated.
Tarantino covered this. The nuances.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. I want something that basically doesn't pretend to be serious. Yeah. And Costner is all about making serious westerns.
Let me just ask, did you see the Coen Brothers True Grit?
I did and I liked it, but it's not, again, I don't remember most of it.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I think this is going to have weirdly a lot of Yellowstone. Why am I blanking on guy's name?
Yeah, I know you're talking
about. Taylor Sheridan. Is going to have a lot of him mapped onto this because he's been working with them.
I liked his miniseries, 1883.
Yeah.
That was a good Western.
And I feel like, I mean, also Yellowstone and 1883 definitely kind of portrayed Native Americans in a different kind of light and showed kind of the hardships that they went through as we decided to, turn them into Catholics and horrible, horrible things that we put upon them.
Yeah.
So I would have...
Smallpox was a big problem.
Yeah. I would have to think that this would tackle kind of that in the same way.
Yep.
Like I said, I don't know if
Nick, you're going to see it in the theater?
Probably. Kaylee thought the trailer looked really good.
I mean, I will say this looks like a theater experience. Yeah, it looks gorgeous.
It looks gorgeous.
Right. It's got those wide open spaces. And I'll say this, like sometimes you see kind of the same old in Western. Like they love, in the 50s and 60s, they love to show Monument Valley.
Yeah.
Is that Arizona? I think it's Arizona, which has some of the most iconic rock structures of all time. But this looks like some new territory, and really beautifully shot.
My brain is like, does it need to be two movies? Does it need to be three movies? I don't know.
Oh, is it based on a true story or anything beyond broadly trying to be like realistic Western?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's based on a book. Although I think I saw in the credits that it was written by him and one other person.
Okay, so.
Probably an original story, if I had to
I'd be curious to, like, to some degree, I'm like, what story did you write that you think deserves two long-ass movies, Kevin?
I just remember back when I was running a video store, was two tapes, and no one rewound it, and I hated them. I hated everybody who rented that movie.
Yeah. Nick had his own six-shooter behind the counter, and he's like, this could be the one. This is maybe the day. All right, so that's our first non-horror one.
Then we got three horror movies.
Yep.
The first one up, let's talk about The Watchers. This is from M. Night Shyamalan's daughter?
I think it was his daughter, but I think it's maybe right. It is their
sister or
it is their,
his wife?
It's possible.
Could be.
His mother? But
the funny thing is, it looked like a Shyamalan movie.
It did. Well, he produced it.
And I know that he has a reputation, and some people will kind of, I think, never forgive him for his missteps.
Yes.
But I have found... enough stuff in some of his last several. His daughter. His last several that I still find him worthwhile. Even, you know, like Knock at the Cabin and Old, which I thought it had some pretty notable issues, but
it did, but it was still,
I was still glad I saw it.
Yeah.
And you know, Nick, you and I know both like The Visit. I can't remember if you saw that, Randy.
Didn't see that one.
Enjoyed The Visit.
So anyway, so Watchers, this seems to be...
It's very much in the M. Night Shyamalan mold. It's based on a novel, and it is basically like these, it's like, what, three or four people?
Something like that.
They're in a strange cabin with a mirror, and the mirror is actually a two-way mirror, and outside it's like there's a whole wilderness.
It's like
put in there, like, trapped.
It's like a warehouse kind of thing in the wilderness, and there's a new arrival, and she's trying to figure out what's going on.
Yep.
And she seems, and the other people indicate that there are watchers, some sort of creatures that you only hear, but they sound like creatures or aliens or something. And that they watch them 24/7.
Yep.
And I feel like this is one of those things that feels like an obvious metaphor for TV or social media or something, but I don't know what exactly they want it to be. But it's creepy. I gotta say, even just the soundscapes of those creatures is pretty good.
The chittering and the...
Yeah. They start making this weird sound, and the new girl is like, she's like, what's that sound? And she's like, they're applauding you or something like that. I'm like, ugh.
Someone's gone native, clearly.
The main character is Dakota Fanning, which
somehow I didn't recognize her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be kind of like a mist, like just all in one location where people go crazy.
I kind of like weird high concept things like that. I'm sure there's a, hey, can we get out of here? What are they up to? Like all those things, I think I will enjoy watching unravel.
Yeah.
I assume they've probably got at least a few interesting things planned for it.
And a big surprise at the end.
And maybe a big surprise at the end. I mean, this one kind of tells you that they want you, that it could be, it looks like the kind of movie that would have a twist. I would probably watch and see at least what the early buzz is before I'd go see it, but I probably will see it.
Yeah, Shyamalan is like the Twilight Zone of our generation.
Yeah, but I guess it'd be like if people like feel like that he like did a few stinker Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah.
And you're like, you don't know if you're gonna get good Shyamalan Twilight Zone or stinko Shyamalan Twilight Zone.
This trailer looks interesting to me. I'll definitely see this.
Yeah. And you know what? Give his daughter a shot.
Yeah.
Let her see if she can. Maybe she can beat the old man.
Yeah.
Will I go read this book ahead of time? I don't know.
That might be fun.
Did you read the one that Knock at the Cabin was based on?
I did. I actually
liked. Did you wind up like that better than the movie?
I liked the novel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that's the problem.
I remember Nick said when you told me though what the ending was that they did in the novel. I was like, I think I might like the movie a little better. I think maybe the morality that it presented, I might have liked.
Yeah,
it a
definitely
little better.
It was not verbatim, and then it went definitely divergent towards the end.
Yeah.
And then we said a Night Shift movie, not a remake of the
Stephen King anthology,
or
the
Ron
Howard comedy in which he runs a brothel out of a morgue. This is Ron Howard, America's sweetheart, maker of Apollo 13, and what's the one where they in the Old West with Tom Cruise?
Oh, remember that? Nicole Kidman?
Yeah, that was him. That was like one of his first big movies.
No Way Out, or it's like some big
Homeward Bound or
Homeward
whatever.
Bound is,
that's
Far and Away.
Is it Far and Away?
Yes.
Homeward Bound is the animal.
He loves these sweeping Americana stories, and yet he also he began with a story about a brothel and a morgue.
So, this new movie is by the China Brothers. Now, as we know, these are twin brothers.
Yeah.
As we know, brothers make great filmmakers. You got the Russo brothers. You got the Safdie brothers.
Yep.
You got the Coen brothers.
Yep.
When you get brothers, but there's another group. The ones that make Talk to Me or something, right? Aren't they brothers?
Well, you know what? Talk to Me. Yes, they
are. There's another set of brothers.
And
Stranger
there's
Things.
Yeah, the
Duffer Brothers.
And you know what else?
Duffer Brothers, yeah.
I would also, I feel like I can't quite. They're not on that level of some of these other guys.
Yep.
But the guys who made From Hell and God, what are those? The Hughes brothers.
Oh yeah.
And like Light It Up and stuff like that. And like most recently, they made that movie Alpha. That's about like an Ice Age man and his first bond ever with like a wild dog.
Okay.
Actually, a pretty good movie.
But anyway, brothers make good movies.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
So this has Phoebe Tonkin, who I don't recognize off the top of my head. But
this has what I think is a cool premise, by the way.
She was in Babylon. Oh no.
I think that's the actors in that.
Yeah, I was looking to see if she'd been in anything. She's in Westworld. She's in the show Westworld.
Okay.
So I like she's done some stuff. but she's not someone you would necessarily know, but she looks, you know, she's the lead. Lamorne Morris from New Girl and Fargo. And basically the premise of this is that a woman starts working at a remote motel on the night shift, and it's kind of creepy and isolated, and she starts thinking maybe it's haunted. And based on the trailer, it's haunted.
Yeah. Well, the imagery is really cool. I thought some of the kind of...
Well, just the way, even before you see, like, before the movie kind of suggests that it may go into supernatural vein, even that, there's just a scene, what is it, where she's, like, outside, is she talking on a phone or something like that?
Yeah.
And you see a car pulling up in the otherwise completely empty lot.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of silently pulling up behind her. And I feel like it's got, like, darkened windows, and there's just a creepy vibe about it.
Yeah.
And it turns out, like, the woman who gets out of it, like, says, like, hi there, and she, like, freaks and she screams or something, and the lady's like, are you okay? And you're like, okay, so, you know, she looks like she's just jumping at shadows, maybe. But, yeah, then we start to see some creepy imagery in it.
Well, and it feels very 70s.
It kind of does,
tone
yeah.
and stuff.
Right, yeah. They even used some 70s graphics that look like some old, like, in movie theater sort of visual graphics and stuff.
But this seems to be an aesthetic that a lot of horror movies, like the David S. Melchin trailer we watched about the kind of Johnny Carson-esque.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That had definitely had kind of a 70s vibe to it as well.
I suppose who's the guy who made Maxine and all those movies?
Oh, Ty West.
His aesthetic has roots in like 70s and 80s, and I imagine he's not my favorite guy, but I do appreciate his aesthetic sometimes, and I think he's probably going to prove to be a big influence on that. But I think this looks good at a glance.
It was a good trailer.
It's a good trailer, very creepy, it didn't give away too much.
Other than the Western trailer, I liked all the trailers we watched.
Yeah.
You know what that Western needed? Horror.
Yeah. The last one is called I Saw the TV Glow. It's an A24 movie. Dave, I think you correctly nailed it. You're like, have you noticed that sometimes A24 movie trailers look like
parodies of A24 movies? Yes. Which is to say, there is some creepy looking stuff in this, but it seems also to be about like sort of a group of kind of the young adults, or maybe they're even teens.
Yeah, they're adults, I think they're. Yeah.
The weird thing is that the dude who's one of the leads is the guy who was the lead in Detective Pikachu, and what was the other thing we just saw him in recently?
The D&D movie.
The D&D movie, he was like the magic user with the crisis of confidence. He has a somewhat similar crisis of confidence here, but it seems like it's just like maybe like an aimlessness in life. And there's a group of people but it's centered around some TV show that looks like a little bit like some of those old weird Sid and Marty Krofft stories from
The Pink Opaque.
Pink Opaque.
It also feels like maybe a Goosebumps type thing. It was about teenagers fighting strange monsters and stuff.
Yep. And they don't say much about it other than like every week they said they said a new monster from across the county.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's like at some specific location. And there's a like and they're like somebody says like it was too scary for most kids, and like so it seems like there's something disturbing about this show. We see people who have like these weird little, are they drawn by themselves or tattooed on their neck?
It's like a little
pink ghosty looking thing that I don't know if it's glowing occasionally in some scenes because of the movie is just showing how they view it or something, or if it literally does glow, but. This show seems to have some hold over them, and they seem to be almost as if they were the characters in the show, having to react to it and possibly face some kind of monster. But, you know, every A24 movie is secretly about getting over grief. This one actually doesn't look about getting over grief, but it does look to be about something else as a thematic, and I don't know exactly what that is yet, other than, don't you get the vibe that these are all young people kind of not sure what to do with their lives?
Yeah.
Maybe not sure what their future is going to be?
It looks like one of the lead female like disappears and Justice Smith has to sort of kind of confront reality and like did she just disappear and walk away or something.
What is it he says about the show that sometimes it feels more real than reality to him or something like that? And is he supposed to have a crush on the girl who he finds out is gay?
Well, I get the impression and she's like she likes girls.
And that actress's name is Bridget Lundy Payne.
She was in Atypical. She's great. She's fantastic.
It looks like the kind of horror movie that, like a lot of A24 stuff, is going to give these actors something to really chew on an interesting script.
Are you looking at the cast? You see the thing I saw?
I think we're on the same wavelength on this.
Guest starring in this as Frank, Fred Durst of Limp Bizkit fame, who apparently has done a bunch of like indie film and stuff. You look at his IMDb list.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
He's done 46 movies as an actor, 44 as a director. I'm sure some of those are music videos.
I saw him in Zoolander.
But yeah.
He did it all for the Nookie. Started. But I saw this was also produced by Emma Stone.
Now he's doing it for Nookie residuals.
That's true.
Also has Amber Benson from Buffy as a mom, one of the characters.
Oh, interesting.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Anyway, I think it looks...
It's a good trailer.
I think it looks interesting.
Yeah.
All of these, like, these days, I at least kind of like... I don't know how you guys use, Rotten Tomatoes and reviews, but I will try and get the general vibe. If something is just utterly getting slammed, probably going to skip it.
Yeah.
I'm like, at least that sounds like it's probably accurate. But if it's anywhere, like, I would say in that probably 60 and up range... And it sounds pretty interesting for most of these movies. I'll probably give them a shot, whether it's at home or at that theater.
For most movies, I do kind of like if it has to reach a threshold. For horror, that's less for me because I think some
good some reviewers will sometimes
like just bash the genre.
It's almost like they just knock off a star because they're like, I'm not into the genre.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I have to take that with a grain of salt about horror movies.
Sure.
And I've watched definitely some stinkers. There are, but I found some ones that people hate that I actually really enjoyed. Yeah. So
same.
All right. Bits of news beyond the trailers.
Yes.
Two bits of Superman news.
Yep.
They cast Wendell Pierce as Perry White.
I think that's awesome.
Which I think he's great, and I
that's
think
what he's the from The Wire, right?
He's from The Wire. Yeah.
He is. She.
Yeah. No, that's not him.
Is
no,
it not?
No, Wendell Pierce is. I thought he was. He's
him and McNulty.
No, he's the punk. Sheehan is the other guy. That's the he's the
Are you sure?
Yes, that's a city councilman. That's his whole thing.
When they did the whole no, they were the,
nope, that is not him.
They were at the crime scene saying shit.
Yeah,
all the
no,
time.
No, that's
the
F bomb.
Oh, that was the F bomb.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Remember, it's the councilman's like shit. That's his thing.
Oh, okay.
That is there's not one of Pierce. That is the. I'm blanking on his name now. I'm going to
see, I haven't seen The Wire, so I saw him and I was like, I think that's the guy.
Somebody even made that reference, but that's not who he is.
Wendell Pierce also played Greer on the new Jack Ryan show, and he did a really good rendition of that character.
Yeah, he's really, really good.
It seemed like they may have picked a pretty good person for him.
I'm looking for the name of that guy, and Isaiah Whitlock Jr. is guy.
Okay.
Yes. Wendell Pierce is the bunk.
I'll also say that Wendell Pierce was also in Hackers.
Wendell Pierce has been in a ton of stuff.
He really has.
And he's good.
He's a working man.
He's good in everything he's been in.
Yeah, it's true.
He was one of the leads in the Tremé, the New Orleans show that David Simon did that I really liked that a lot of people didn't, but I enjoyed. Anyway, he's with Perry White. It's good casting.
I think so.
And James Gunn, they started filming, and he revealed that the title will not be Superman Legacy. It's just going to be Superman.
Yeah.
Yep, I saw him post about this, and I forget what exactly how he put it, but he basically said that by the time he got to it, he realized that that was the obvious thing to do with the story. I think
he said when he started writing it, it was Superman Legacy, and when he finished it, he realized it was Superman.
Yeah, which I think that's an interesting way to frame it.
Also, I don't know how James Gunn is filming a movie because he seems to be on social media 24/7. He's just like, no, that's a false rumor. And it's just like every time something pops up, he immediately pops up.
He's probably on the cocaine.
Yeah.
I'm
probably so.
I mean, I hope not, but sure.
I'm hopeful this. I'm always worried. DC has let me down many times. James Gunn mostly hasn't, so I'm really hopeful.
This is a new page. This is a new story for the DC universe.
I hope it's good. I hope it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I do too.
The big thing for me is David Zaslav is involved. And I'm like, I don't know if I trust anything that guy puts out. Yeah. He's up at the top. I'm worried that he's going to fire James Gunn the day after Superman finishes and bring in Zack Snyder to finish it or something.
And he's going
to
shelve it and
never see it. Like that dude is like cancer to entertainment. He's
Zack Snyder will do a 15-hour cut that will go back to being called Superman Legacy.
Yeah.
And they're gonna CG Henry Cavill with mustache in over it.
Yes.
And he's gonna splice in elements from his Justice League movie and Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
And yes, towards the end, a cameo by Leonidas.
This is Metropolis.
All right. In maybe the weirdest news this week, Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Has been tapped to take the lead of the Naked Gun reboot starting and that's coming out in 2025. And I think we're all in the opinion that is probably the right call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to reboot Naked Gun, which I'm not sure you should do, but if you're going to, Liam Neeson is a good pick for it.
Right. I feel like everybody should, if you have any doubts about this, You need to look him up. An amazing scene with him on what
extras.
Was the show? Not extras. It's called like
Big. Oh yeah, Life's Too Short.
Life's Too Short.
Yeah, you're right.
But it is extras like, and it has Ricky Gervais in the trailer and all that, and it has Warwick Davis, and it's a scene in which Liam Neeson pitches to some producers and stuff that he wants to start doing comedy. And they're like, well, that's not really what people want from you. And they run through some scenes with him, and he plays it
completely straight, and he's hilarious.
And he's like just bitterly dark. And you just need to see it. So Google Liam Neeson comedy or something like that. You'll find it. You will see that he could pull off the straight faced Frank Drebin in a new way.
The thing about the originally, like, Leslie Nielsen was known for being the sort of straight laced.
He was sort of a handsome 50s leading man. He is the lead in one of the serious sci-fi movies. What's it called? Not Fantastic Voyage. Nick, can you look it up?
But he also, I mean, it was a
movie that inspired Star Trek.
Yeah. But also, isn't he in not The Towering Inferno, but the other one, The Poseidon Adventure? Isn't that also Liam?
Possibly.
Anyway, he was known for being a serious actor, and then they sort of played against type to put him in Naked Gun.
Right.
So this makes a lot of sense. Also, Liam Neeson showed up as himself in Atlanta, which is also a weird comedy thing, and he can play sort of dry comedy.
I saw him do a scene. I've never seen the movie Ted, but I saw a solidly funny scene with him in Ted.
Isn't he in Forbidden Planet? That was the
Forbidden Planet. That's the one I was trying to find. But anyway,
and Poseidon Adventure, Randy was correct.
Okay, I think we would agree. In general, let's do less remakes and stuff like that. But
this
could
work.
What? I don't feel like exactly they're gonna tarnish the legacy.
Right.
When did the last Naked Gun come out? It was the 2.5. So 91.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's enough time.
There's enough time.
2.5, did you say?
Wasn't there a 33?
No, there was a third. There was a third.
Oh, you're right. That was 94.
Okay. 94. That's 30 years, y'all. That's enough time.
Yeah, get over yourselves. I feel like that type of comedy, I feel, you know, they still do sometimes movies like that, but the Scary Movie series was, I think, the last big one push for it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time for some more dumb comedy.
Yeah, I was wondering if they
had just any, like, joke after joke and like crazy absurd visual gags and all that.
I was looking to see if the IMDb had anything on it, but no, it looks like it's just fairly new. They haven't told us anything like who's making it, that kind of thing. So we'll see. It says directed by Akiva Schaffer, who did Hot Rod and Pop Star Don't Stop Poppin', which are both Andy Samberg movies.
Okay.
Lesser known.
I don't have any strong opinion on that.
This is going to be a Lonely Island.
He's a Lonely Island guy.
Yeah.
He also worked on Saturday Night Live.
I think Lonely Island isn't a bad vibe for Naked Gun movies. Yep. That kind of, you know, some of the weird turns that some of their stuff do at the end.
Show up in the Naked Gun movie.
Yeah, for sure.
He's already been a cop.
Yeah. He directed a ton of the Lonely Island videos, looks like. Or he wrote a bunch of Lonely Island videos. He directed the Chippendale Rescue Rangers, which was actually really fun.
You know what I want to see? I want to see Frank Drebin bringing in a guy who did the Dick in a Box thing. Yeah. And it's going to be Andy Samberg, and he's like busted him for it. Just a thought.
He directed a bunch of Lonely Island videos. He also directed a couple episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is the right energy for this.
Yeah.
So this is all potentially good.
Yeah, weirdly good ideas.
Oh, he directed The Watch. that weird movie with like Seth Rogen and Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller that was like, they were like the neighborhood watch.
Oh, weird.
But then it turns out there's an alien invasion, apparently.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that
one. I've never seen this, but yeah. Anyway, it'll be interesting. And the last bit of news, this was exciting to me. I don't know if y'all will care about this. Apple Plus has greenlit a Neuromancer series.
Oh, yeah, I did see this.
This is the William Gibson, one of his early cyberpunk novels.
Formative cyberpunk novel. One which nowadays has, like, a lot of technology that would be clearly dated. Like, it was, like, the pre-kind of wireless vision of the future.
Right.
And so here's my question to you, Randy.
Yep.
Would you prefer to see this in some kind of a weird retro cyberpunk future?
Yes.
Or would you rather they go ahead and update it?
Yes, retro style future.
Do you remember the name of the evil AI in it?
Oh,
it has a cool name.
I don't remember. What is
Wintermute.
It? That's right.
It's a cool name.
So yeah, they're running a heist against a corporation, and then they're heisting against an AI. It had
cyber assassins and all that kind of stuff.
So it says there's the pitch for it. A damaged top rung super hacker named Case who is thrust into a web of digital espionage and high-stakes crime with his partner Molly, a Razor Girl assassin with mirrored eyes, aiming to pull a heist on a corporate dynasty with untold secrets. Molly is one of the coolest characters in Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
And if they can get her right, that'll be half the battle here.
She would have to be played by Anya Taylor-Joy. I'm sorry, even if she's not appropriate, she's playing her.
I'm super excited for this.
TV show or movie?
A TV show.
Okay, that seems like an interesting format.
Graham Rowland and J.D. Dillard, who worked on Jack Ryan, Dark Winds, and The Outsider, which HBO's The Outsider was great.
It was.
I'm not sure. That is not the people I would go to for, like...
Is J.D. Dillard an old West sheriff?
It sounds like he should be. I'm not sure that these are the people I would put on my, like, heisty cyberpunk book. The stuff they do doesn't seem... It seems a little darker than that. But... they're saying the right things. They said that they've wanted to team up on this, that they're looking forward to bringing the definitive cyberpunk world. I'm like, get it right.
Is this just a stealth remake of Giant Amalek?
No, stop that. Stop it.
A knockoff version of Giant Amalek. That's what I'm hearing.
I gotta say I'm pretty interested.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Now, here's one more question.
Yep.
If they do go ahead and advance the technology and make it wireless and they upgrade whatever they need to,
yep.
Would you be okay with that?
I'd be okay with it as long as they do it right.
Okay.
As long as it's good. You can do a lot of things as long as it's good.
I don't know if I read this one or was it Mona Lisa Overdrive? That was the other one.
Mona Lisa Overdrive was like the second or third book he did.
Okay. I think I may have read that one. And maybe not.
There was a short story that introduced Molly in a, I think Burning Chrome was
yeah, a... Yeah, that rings
and
a
then
bell.
Neuromancer... A Giant Mnemonic is also in Burning Chrome, I think.
Okay.
It's a short story collection. Then Neuromancer was his first novel. Then Mona Lisa Overdrive. Then Virtual Light, I think. Yeah. And he's done a bunch since then.
He has.
All right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.